Hello, I'm Stephen Goodwin. It's Tuesday, December the 23rd, 2008, and welcome to episode number 30 of The Beer Crate, the podcast for ale lovers the world over. Each week, we'll be looking at the world of beer and brewing, investigating local, national, and international breweries, and tasting a wide selection of beers, ales, and ciders. Lager boys may apply. Coming up on today's show, we have our special Christmas edition. After the news and drinkers' diary, we'll have quick tastings, featuring Christmas beers with odd ingredients and silly names. We also have the second part of our interview with Mike Knight of the Freedom Brewery, and an intriguing and short Try Before You Die. So let's get cracking. News, and Heineken are closing Ireland's oldest brewery, moving the production of its porter and stouts to the Murphy Brewery, also in Cork. With credit crunch being mentioned as an excuse for everything these days, Heineken have used the alternative catchphrase of challenging market dynamics. But for the 120 newly redundant workers, it means the same thing. And InBev have U-turned again, by announcing that Petermann Artois and Aikin Artois are to be phased out by April 2009. This is not, alas, in favour of a new Folsom Ale, but so they can more heavily promote Stella, a beer that, it has to be said, could do with some better non-wife-beating PR rather than simplistic brand promotion. Drinker's Diary. And in the run-up to Christmas, every night is party night, so there's no room for our beloved beer festivals. We shall, however, mention two that are taking place in the new year. The first is the 8th Derby 12th Night Winter Beer Festival, which takes place between Thursday the 8th and Saturday the 10th of January. This is in the Assembly Rooms Marketplace, Derby, and comes complete with the usual selection of real ales, ciders, perries, and continental beers. Also kick-starting the new year is the 20th Exeter Festival of Winter Ales, on Friday the 9th and Saturday the 10th of January. The doors of Lower Exhibition Hall, Exeter University, open at 11 a.m. for the tasting of 60 winter-only brews. We now conclude our two-part interview with Mike Knight of the Freedom Brewery. As well as being a rarity in organic beer, you're also a rarity in the microbrewing industry by brewing a lager-based beer. Was that a conscious decision?
Okay, well, again, I can't comment on anything that happened before 4 years ago. Back in 95, they set up the first lager microbrewery, for whatever reasons, I don't know. When we decided to set up a microbrewery 4 years ago, it wasn't Freedom. We actually took over the Freedom brand. We firstly decided to set up a microbrewery, and then, yeah, as the serendipity and whatever happens, that the Freedom brand became available, and we took over the Freedom brand. But when we decided to start a microbrewery, we knew there was a lot of really good British ales out there, microbrewed ales, but not many microbrewed lagers. And partly it was seeing a gap in the market. There's not many good microbrewed lagers out there. I mean, I have to say, we were the generation brought up drinking lager, but we were drinking Skull, we were drinking Stella, we were drinking... I know, yeah, and all those words. But yeah, but we wanted to actually produce a good lager. Yeah, there was some fantastic, you know, I've been to the Munich Beer Fest, you know, I've had Paulaner, Hackebeschorn, fantastic, you know, lager can be absolutely a fantastic drink. Czechoslovakian beers, and we wanted to replicate that. Now, the big slice of fortune that we had, and I'd like to say it was planned, but it wasn't, when we set up the brewery in Abbots Bromley, we knew it was sitting on top of a lake of water, but we didn't realise it was Burton water. We had it tested, and it's Burton water, which is one of the three best brewing waters in the world, very similar to the Pilsen water. And when we saw the results of the test, we were absolutely overjoyed. Although Burton water traditionally produces good ales, we were a little unsure whether it would work with a lager, but when we started brewing the beer, it absolutely worked. We can produce a good Czech style lager, and yeah, we just wanted to have a good English microbrewed lager. Yeah, we liked lager. Yeah, lager can be a fantastic drink, and we wanted a good English lager. And I think, well, I know that we have actually produced one.
Absolutely. When you mentioned Burton Water, I'm thinking Coors and Sam Smith's, all good brews, and 95% Burton Water.
Well, there is, and people don't believe me, they think this is a sales pitch, but there is actually a thing called a Burtonizer. It's a machine that makes brewing water like Burton water.
So what does a Burtonizer do?
I would guess it makes the water harder because the... Well, Burton water has got... it comes from layers of gypsum, and it's the minerals in the water that give it its unique properties. It's magic, exactly, yeah. And I presume the Burtonizer does that. I don't know. But there we are, sitting on top of... This lake is about 7 miles by 9 miles, apparently. So it's not going to run out. not for a while, anyway.
So with the brewery that you have up in Burton and the one down here in the Bunker
in
Bar...
Covent Garden, yeah.
Do you ship the water down here?
It's not. But actually, London water is actually quite similar to Burton water.
It's a hard water.
But it's a hard water, exactly, yeah. So, I mean, and actually the pills that are produced down here in Covent Garden is not dissimilar to what's produced up in Burton. Maybe not as fantastic, but it's fine all the same. It's fine all the same.
So are both breweries the same political entity with the same recipes and everything else?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the most important thing is the same master brewer, Ian Ward. Ian Ward will split his time between a week in Burton and a week down here, or maybe sometimes three days at a time down in London. But yeah, exactly the same recipe, the same brewer, which yeah, to me is the most important thing. So it's essentially the same beer.
Most people think of breweries as a massive concern, but aside from Ian and yourself, who else is involved in Freedom?
We have two brewers, two directors, myself, I'm sales for London. One of the directors, Ed, is sales for up north. Sorry, I hate that expression, up north. But for who is the salesman for the area around the brewery and north of there. We've got someone doing admin and a delivery guy. So is that seven people, if my mathematics is correct? So it's small. And we do a little, in terms of delivery, we do some distribution through Vintage Roots, Vince Raymar, Spearhead. But we like to... And we hope, you know, no matter how big we become, we hope to always do some of the distribution ourselves, because there is that relationship that you get with your more long-standing customers, and they like to see the same person, and they like to know that, you know, it's the Freedom van turning up, and that if there's any problems, you know, they can call us and we will react to those problems, rather than, you know, a big conglomerate doing the deliveries. So yeah, you know, we'd always hope that we will have an aspect of the company that will be personal delivery. Obviously, if it becomes bigger and bigger, then distribution, particularly in London, is difficult. If anyone that's tried to deliver in London will realise that. So some of it has to be given out, contracted out. But we'd always want to have that at the coal face, that it's us delivering. Brewing the beer, delivering the beer, they can talk to me if there's any problems.
Distribution isn't a problem here in the Bunker Bar. The distance from brewing to drinking is about 2.5 metres.
About that. Absolutely, yes. So, I mean, our beer is wonderful, but when beer doesn't travel, it tastes better. No one knows why. It's just a fact. It is absolutely a fact. It's a universal fact that if beer doesn't travel, it tastes a little bit better. So to me, a pint at the Bunker is going to be a wonderful pint.
Although we've only had one pint.
Of each.
Honest.
Yes.
There's three Freedom beers, Organic, Pilsner and the Red, now called Dark. What are the primary differences between them?
Okay, the Organic obviously is organic. The Freedom Organic Dark, again, is obviously organic. The Pilsner isn't. The reason the Pilsner isn't organic is a problem with getting the organic ingredients. And yeah, in a way, we perhaps don't want to be seen as the organic brewery. We've got organic beers there, but yeah, that's we're happy to have that, but it's not the big thing that we're an organic brewery. The difference, it's down to hops mainly. The Organic Dark is an interesting one, 4.7%. It's a dark lager, and it's served chilled. It's served as a lager, but is dark in colour. Maybe slightly sweeter taste. I actually hate to say that ladies like this drink, because that sounds very sexist, and I don't want to go down that road. But I would say it is. And then the organic is our biggest seller. The organic has probably got the widest appeal, the most mainstream appeal. The Pilsner is the one that the beer drinkers go for. It's got those citrus notes in it. It's got a bigger taste, which the big taste isn't the broadest appeal. I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes sense to beer drinkers.
Yeah, it makes sense. But if you're serious about good beer, I would maybe try the Pilsner first. That will hit the palate in a bigger way. The other two are absolutely fantastic beers. The Pilsner is the one I would say that Ian, that's it. If you like, the Pilsner is Ian's signature beer.
I can see why it's a good beer, but as someone that also spends a lot of time with camera members, it's an uphill struggle sometimes to get them to consider a beer with Pils written on it.
Yeah.
Do you also find that?
Yes, absolutely. The thing about... Camois will go for the German, the continental lagers, and accept them and say they're wonderful as they are. It's almost like if it's an English lager, there's suddenly the shutters come down. But you know, we what's the big difference? You know, we're doing. I think lager has suffered over the years with the. I won't mention any brand names, but the big names and the mass produced and the chemical enhanced and the colourings and the flavourings. You know, the fact is we use no additives, no colourings, no flavours. It's just the four ingredients produced in a microbrewery with not mass produced. It's handcrafted, produced with love and care. We give it time. So what are we doing wrong? Absolutely nothing. And We've actually, I mean, the guys from SIBA are now on our side and they love what we're doing. And actually, I mean, maybe I'm being unfair to Camera, because a lot of Camera guys have actually tried the beer and really liked it. So I think it's just a case of this sea change of attitude of lager. Lager, there is a guy from Camera who calls it the L word, which I think is a bit unfair. But lagers have, lager louts, blah, blah, blah. But I think we've got to change that attitude and look at, it's not just us, there are other good English lagers out there. And there's a lot of people doing it. And let's almost have a campaign for real lager. I'm sure it's, may or may not catch on, I don't know. But, there are some good British microbrewed lagers out there. Or as I say, give it a go, give it a try. Well, I mean, unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember, the days when it was Watney's Red Barrel. And, so why not, why didn't we say, oh, Watney's Red Barrel is awful, so beer's awful? They didn't. What Camois did, and Camois have been one of the most successful pressure groups. They have an absolutely fantastic job compared to the days of the Red Barrel and whatever else was around. And they actually said, this is not good enough. And they actually brought in all the microbrewed beers. So, why not do the same where there's lots of mass-produced lagers that aren't fantastic? So let's get some good ones. And the good ones are there. Yeah. So let's bring them to the fore and let's support them. And certainly SIBA are on our side. And SIBA are up for doing it.
So aside from your own beer, what's your favourite tipple for the summertime?
The summertime, I would go for Aspall cider. But partly is because I know the guys and they're lovely guys. I always meet them at shows and we have a real laugh. And we've always had this fantasy that us and Aspall's are going to get together and form a snake bite company. I'm sure it won't happen.
And if we stranded you in the icy tundra, what would you choose then?
Ooh. Does Fuller's London Pride count as a winter beer? Probably not.
It does for me.
Yeah.
Or Golden Pride.
Actually, I mean Golden Pride. There's something about Fuller's London Pride. Nobody dislikes London Pride. And I am mainly a lager drinker, I'll admit. But I love London. Even in bottle, I've had bottled London Pride. It's wonderful. I like Fuller's as a company. They've maintained that family image, even though they are a big company now. can I go outside of the country? I would say for the winter, Rodenbach Grand Cru. Just the spiciest, loveliest beer in the world.
And on that note, we say Mike Knight, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for talking to me.
Quick tastings. In this section, we give a brief yet discriminating summary of a number of different beers from around the world. All have been personally tasted and graded. Naturally, everyone has different tastes, and these are mine, so your mileage may vary. Pickled Santa from Hopback. Hopback are noted for a wide range of fun and interesting beers, such as Summer Lightning. Pickled Santa is one of these, being both fizzy and spicy, with good overall zesty notes on the nose, giving it the feel of a Christmas beer without resorting to cinnamon, and it's still strong enough to make you fall asleep in front of the fire after lunch. At 6%, and 7.5 out of 10. Good King Senseless from Vale Brewery. This is a 5.2% beer with little fizz and mild bitterness. It's a solid and straight beer that delivers everything you'd expect from a standard bitter, but nothing specifically Christmassy or out of the ordinary to make this any more special than the 7 out of 10 I'm awarding it this week. Santa's Nuts from the Fox Brewery. This is mild in structure but not aromatic in any way. It has a thin palate and mouthfeel, and nothing at all like its touted 4.8% alcohol. The best quote regarding this beer was that it tasted a bit like hairspray, with a dry raspiness on the tongue. My disclaimer being, I have never tasted hairspray, but I have had Santa's Nuts on my tongue, and based on that experience, I can award it 4 out of 10. Reindeer's Delight from Oakleaf. A combination of crystal and chocolate malt give this 4.5% beer a rounded taste with soft bitterness and an effective raisin and sultana aftertaste. This does make it different, and the constant hop throughout makes it beer-like, but it seems a little like a gimmick than anything. But it's perfectly drinkable, and so gets 7 out of 10. Try Before You Die. In this section of the show, we will cast a discerning eye over the best beers that this world has to offer. We shall mention its history, the brewery behind the beer, and why we feel this is a superior brew worthy of your attention. This week, Anchor Steam Christmas Ale. This is a very difficult beer to review because the recipe is different every single year, as is the label. The ale's motto is to celebrate the newness of life, and therefore it's changing. It is, however, generally a spiced dark ale, making it perfectly suitable for winter and Christmas. But that's all I can say, because next year it'll be different. Okay, that wraps it up for this week. To give us a tasting of your opinions, you can email us on thebeercrate@gmail.com. If you prefix the subject line with 2 colons, you can be sure to avoid the spam filters. Remember to enjoy everything from the Beer Crate safely and responsibly, so you can be back here with us next week. Until then, cheers. Has been released under the Creative Commons Attribution, No Commercial, No Derivatives version. See www.thebeercrate.com for details.